Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call on Thursday, the 27th of January, we have Jeff Newman, Alex Gakuru, James Bladel, Alan Greenberg, Paul Diaz, Avery Doria. From staff, we have Glinda Saint-Géry, Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies noted from David Maher and Tony Harris. If I could just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Newman. I'm the chair of the PDP work team. Welcome to our weekly Thursday call. Just as a reminder, we do meet now Thursdays and Mondays at the same time. I'm going to try to keep these calls, since we're meeting twice a week, to just an hour, just so we can have some sanity. And also, I just want to note, again, so we do not have anyone from the intellectual property constituency. We have not heard from John Berard from the VC. Tony, I guess ISPs are not here either. Has anyone heard from Wolf?
This is Marika. I think Wolf normally joins a little bit later in this call because he has another meeting that goes a bit into this call. But I think that's his usual practice. But I don't know if that's the same for this call.
Okay. I will note the again. This is, I guess, the second meeting now or third meeting or so that we haven't had really participation from the commercial stakeholder group. So I'll have to mention that at some point. All right. We are going to we got Alan's comments this morning or late last night for some people. And so we Marika has incorporated those comments into the outstanding issues list and into the document where possible. Some of those issues actually relate to areas that we've already passed in the report, so we Marika put them at the end of the outstanding issues list. So rather than backtracking now, we'll just kind of cover that at the end.
I'd like to nominate Marika for outstanding staff support person for doing that. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
I second that. First thing I wanted to ask is, are we expecting anybody else to file any comments before we kind of consider at least this part closed? And obviously by this part, it's just to get the report out for public comment, so anyone's free to comment at that point in time or, frankly, at any point. But, just put a stake in the ground here. Or for Avery and my sake, who's shoveling out of our driveways to put a shovel in the snow. So with that said, we have we left off at issue number or recommendation 16, which is outstanding issue on page 19 at the bottom, continues into 20. And so that is on the... We started talking about it, and we probably got most of the way through it, but it's on the right to basically, it's flexibility and the right of one stakeholder group, constituency, et cetera, to ask for a one-meeting delay in a vote. This is a vote to initiate the PDP. And what we had talked about was that a individual on behalf of their stakeholder group or constituency could, we should continue this practice that's been going on in the council. And we just also wanted to, as part of it, if you look at the notes on top of page 20, we were going to consider whether the addition of, on behalf of the stakeholder group constituency would be appropriate following voting council member. And then Marika had circulated kind of the average time frames for PDPs. I think that came up in our discussion last week. So is there any other thoughts on that? If you look at the left side, you'll see the proposed language. And Avery?
Yeah, just a quick thought that I didn't have until this morning when you started speaking of it, is why is this part of the PDP practice? It seems to actually be a general GNSO council practice, and perhaps it does belong in the GNSO guidebook, and perhaps it doesn't. But why is this a PDP-specific issue? Thanks.
Yeah, it may not only be a PDP-specific issue. It is not, but I think, you know, our kind of mandate is really only look at the PDP. So if much like we said, we're going to kind of adopt the working group rules to the PDP process, I would think others who are looking at the general operations of the GNSO could say, hey, that's a good idea. We should apply that across the board. But that's the only reason. It's really just because that's what our scope is. And, you know, I suppose we could have a note in the report itself saying we think this is a general good idea, not just for PDPs, but for everything. But I think as far as the recommendation, it's kind of limited to the PDP. Does that make sense, or did I not answer that?
No, it's fine. It's just that I'm just wondering if we need to go further. We need to, you know, liaise either with the rest of the council or whoever is taking care of the general practices to do something. I mean, yeah, you're right. With the working group work team, there was a certain amount of back and forth, and, you know, the PDP adopted their practices. They adopted the OSC's practices or worked with the SOI, DOI stuff. And, yes, there's been a lot of, you know, cross-trading between these various little work teams, you know, I won't get into the why. But so I'm just wondering whether it's fine, you say, to do this, but whether one should also ask the OSC, which is, you know, the one that's responsible for the guidebook except for this section, whether this is something that they want to do something and incorporate it or not. Because it is a broader issue. It's a general council practice, and it seems to me that it's actually totally irrelevant to PDPs per se. It has to do with council practice, not with how you run a PDP. I don't think a PDP is any more or less valid because of this practice. This is just council practice. So, I mean, you know, do whatever, you know, you think is right. It just strikes me that we've left a gap here between, you know, passing this off to the other group that has responsibility for council practice. That's all. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. Anybody else with comments on this recommendation issue?
It's Alan. Sorry, I'm not can't put my hand up right now. I agree with Aubrey in principle, but should the working group, should council decide that this is not a practice that they want to do in general because it's causing too much disruption or whatever? I still think I think it does belong here because we're saying PDPs are important enough that we want to make sure that constituencies can have that opportunity. So I think it's valid to put here, given that we do not know exactly what council will do in the more general case.
Okay. James?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. James speaking. And maybe I'm looking at this through the other side of the looking glass, but I see the benefit of keeping this in a PDP-specific context is that it defines the maximum number of times the council can defer on a PDP so that they're not that one or more groups within a council are not continuously, let's say, deferring a PDP as a means to push it down the road as far as possible. So I think that there's another benefit here is that we're also setting a maximum.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, James, and one that we kind of haven't discussed. But I think that's the point's well taken. Aubrey and Alan, I mean, it seems like everyone's okay with it in there. Just kind of noting maybe in the body of the report that we think this may be good practice council wide for any item that they're working on.
This is Aubrey again. Yeah, leave it in. I do think that perhaps some notification, an email or whatever, should be sent to Philip/Ray, you know, discussing the issue and asking whether they want to deal with it. Would be an outcome. I hadn't actually thought of the point that that is in any sense saying at most it can be pushed off one meeting. It says it can be pushed off one meeting. I'm actually not sure that that wording says at most it can be. I'm not looking at it at the moment. But if that's what we want to say, then perhaps we should say that.
How does everybody feel about that? I mean, that's kind of what James is saying. It's a changing of the wording. Does anybody agree, disagree with that? Alan?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we would want to be, say, at most, you know, I'm not sure we understand what contingencies can come up that may require yet another postponement. There have been postponements of other important motions, including, I believe, PDP ones that have gone on for more than one meeting because you know, the second time it was deferred for a different reason. So I'm not sure we want to be too dogmatic of it, although I agree with the concern that you don't want someone to be able to keep on putting it off forever. But I'm not sure we want to be too dogmatic.
Yeah, the way, and I remember this came up with another motion we were talking about at the council level, and the first time it's deferred almost basically as of right. One person asks for it on behalf of their group, and it's automatically deferred. The next time it actually has to come to a vote of the council on whether to actually defer it.
Perhaps, yeah.
And because I remember Stefan and I had discussed that about one of the motions. It turned out the motion was actually voted on, but before the meeting, someone had said that they still wanted more time. And
I think the practice has been to defer even before the discussion sometimes, which, you know, so when the actual salient discussion is held the next time, there may be a valid, a substantive reason for deferring. I'm not sure, you know, I think it's varied over the times. So I wouldn't want to be too dogmatic.
Okay, James?
Yeah, I think I agree with Alan. I think in the general case, you know, we need to ensure that council and council members individually have the flexibility that they need for all possible situations. But I think that we also need to just emphasize either in this section or with some additional language outside of the recommendation that we as a community, especially those who are sending them PVPs, need some reasonable expectations of a decision, and that it won't linger for, you know, I'm thinking of fast flux, which I don't really, you know, hold that up as a council deferral, but, you know, it was just kind of out there over my head like a sword of Damocles for, you know, over a year and a half, and they just kind of, and it was, you know, it was kind of wrapped up and it went away. But, you know, it was just, that was an issue where we need to kind of wrap these things up if we're going to take on new and exciting topics and issues. And, you know, in order to dive into those, we need to make sure that we've got a process to saw off on everything that's currently out there. So flexibility, but, you know, some reasonable consistency in the expectations of the folks who are preparing the PDPs.
Okay, so it sounds like basically we probably should just leave the language and the recommendation the way it is, with some notes in the report basically saying that this may be a good practice for other items the council handles. And as Avery suggested, maybe a note to an email to Philip. And actually, there'll be at some point soon, there's going to be a standing committee. That the council had passed a resolution, I think in December, at the Cartagena meeting, to set up a standing committee to look at issues that have already been resolved, or recommendations that have already been put into place. And so I don't know if it's more appropriate, to which group it's more appropriate, but either way, we'll send the message. Marika and Alan?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that the current version of the draft final report actually doesn't have a section on notes. What we refer people to is initial report where we basically try to capture the work team discussions on the different items. So an alternative would be to actually, you know, capture this in the outstanding issues document and maybe provide a link to that so it's still tracked somewhere. Or, you know, another way of capturing it somewhere in the report, but then we need to maybe create a separate section. We actually don't have it for the other items in the report. We just provide the recommendations and the suggested language for the procedure manual and the bylaws.
Okay. So I'm sorry, wait. So Marika, but isn't there a more full discussion in the body of this report on each of these items?
No, that's basically what was an initial report where we had for each of the items a different discussion notes that we had and you know, more fleshed out what we were thinking about. But for this report, to make it shorter, the idea would be just to provide a link to that discussion, you know, referring back to the initial report where all that information is captured. As I said, a way to capture it would be provide a link to, for example, this document where, you know, some further notes are captured as well. Or another way would be to add additional bullet points to each of the recommendations. But as I said, you know, we haven't done that for any of them so far.
Yeah, but we need to be capturing the discussion we've had since the initial report. So somehow that does need to be captured somewhere, whether
right,
it's appendix or somewhere else.
And the way that is captured is the reflection of the public comments received, and there we provide as well a link to the public comment review tool so where people can see how we've, you know, discuss each of the comments and how these have been addressed. So, but it would be as well linking. And another way would be then to link this document that's on the right-hand side of the Adobe Connect screen to make sure that people can see how we've discussed each of these items. I mean, another way would be to actually bring the outstanding issues document into the final report as a separate chapter and say, look, now, from the initial report, these are the items that we further discuss, and this is what we discussed. This is the, you know, agreement we reach on the approach to take, because that's basically what's reflected in the document. That would be another approach, just to incorporate the outstanding issues document into the final report. But it's more a question of, you know, how long do you want to make it, and, you know, will people really read that, or is linking sufficient? But that's for the work team to decide.
Yeah, I think as Avery says in the chat area, I think making that outstanding issues document an appendix to the report or annex or whatever you want to call it, I think that's a good idea. I would like to see this captured, and whether someone reads it or not, you know, that's their own prerogative, but it should be in there.
Okay.
Alan?
Yeah, I had my hand up to talk back on the substance of this particular point, and after my hand raised, I realized we're sort of between a rock and a hard place. It may be worthwhile putting a recommendation in saying council should be able to defer once pro forma based on its standard operating practices, but any more than that requires a vote of council. The downside of that is, what happens if council does not vote to defer and therefore forces the vote on a PDP and one of the stakeholder groups ends up saying, well, we said we weren't ready to vote, you know, and therefore the outcome is not really valid. So I, you know, as I said, I put my hand up to say perhaps we should put something in saying only one pro forma, you know, automatic deferral, the rest require a vote, but there's a downside to that too, and I'm not quite sure where we end up.
Yeah, I think why don't we just leave the recommendation as it is, because
okay.
I think you're right. And let's see what if we get any comments to that effect.
Okay.
Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Can I just clarify then as well that we're not going to add the on behalf of stakeholder group constituencies, or we're still getting to that part of the discussion, or we're leaving the recommendation as it currently stands?
Well, I'm not hearing any further discussion on the language, but I'll raise the question again. If you look at the wording on the left, you'll see that the stakeholder group and our constituency is crossed out. So it basically says any voting council members can request a deferral of the consideration. And what we talked about last time is that each constituency and stakeholder group had their own rules and procedures, and to add the words on behalf of didn't really... In the one hand, it didn't really add too much when you say a voting council member. On the other hand, it could be taken as kind of a an imposition on, it could look like we're basically telling counselors how they have to act, even though we all implicitly know that, you know, really when they do vote on something, it really should be on behalf of the group. But
do we really need voting there, by the way? You're only excluding one person. You're excluding the non-voting NOMCOM.
And the CCNSO liaison and any other liaison?
No, they're not council members according to the way the bylaws are worded.
Right. You know, I think it's fine. Well, I'll let James comment.
Oh, yeah, well, just I guess if it's explicit that there are council members, capital C, capital M, then I suppose that's okay. I think what we wanted to, at least my feedback on this language, was that we wanted to ensure that it was being channeled through the appropriate council representation for each stakeholder. If the stakeholder group or constituency wanted a delay, that it was going through the proper channels and not just kind of coming at the council from all different directions. So if we want to be specific and say, you know, council member only or something, that's fine. But I think that the key here was that we just didn't want it, we didn't want them being bombarded from requests from all different directions.
Yeah, the reason I raise it is you could say that the request for deferral is because I am not ready to vote or my stakeholder group is not ready to vote, in which case the word voting is appropriate. But I think it's also reasonable for the same reason that on any board or group someone can ask for a deferral, is because we do not believe there has been substantive discussion or, you know, there is some salient information that we believe needs to be added before we have a vote. And I think the non-voting NOMCOM appointee should be able to make that kind of request as well. I mean, it's a person who's contributing, you know, who's part of council and contributing, even though they don't have a vote. So it's not
a big thing. I disagree with that part, but I guess there's a queue, so I'll stop. But I do disagree with that part.
Yeah. Okay. So the other reason I like, and I started to say before I let James, the reason I like any voting council or the reason I like voting council members is I know Alan, what you're saying is technically correct that in theory. Not in theory, but according to the bylaws, the only council members are those that represent the stakeholder group or constituencies. The reason I like voting in there is because I don't like referring to those members as not members of council, even if the bylaws say that. So I want to make it clear that we are here. If this is what we all agree to, that it's any voting council member, and not. I just think we need to be clear and not have to refer people to the bylaws to figure out who is a council member.
Well, okay. Being the only liaison who's in this position, there is a CCNSO one, which is a liaison, but, you know, I'm regularly reminded of it. But so I don't need to be reminded. The point I'm raising it is the non-voting NOMCOM person already is sort of has been shafted in that they've been appointed to council, but they don't get a vote. This is yet another sort of, you know, twisting the knife, and it's not a big thing. I'll yield.
Okay, Aubrey.
Yeah, I guess I find of us two minds about it. And at first, I was saying, yeah, we should leave the voting in, but you're right. Thinking about the shafting of the homeless NOMCOM member who is not a voting member, and to say that they have no right to defer something, even though they are a and should be considered a full and equal member of the council. The one thing that bothers me about the voting about the council member is I would hate to have a prejudice between two different liaisons because, well, one is a council member and one liaison is not. I would think all liaisons should be equal and that all liaisons should be the same as any council member except in regard to voting and such. So, as I say, I think it should be by a, you know, GNSO appointed or elected council member, but I don't think we should be prejudicing against one liaison against another.
Sorry, I didn't mean to imply that we were. If I said that, it came out wrong. Under the previous bylaws, there was a distinction between the GAC and the ALAC liaisons and any other ones who the GNSO might choose to add in. There's not really such a distinction anymore.
Hey, James?
Yeah, sorry, Jeff. This has already gone on a lot longer than I imagine you had thought of. I think that we still don't want to lose sight of the idea that it's coming through, you know, any request to defer is coming up through the stakeholder groups. And I guess my concern with the NOMCOM representative there is that if they requested a deferral, wouldn't that almost by definition be coming from them as an individual as opposed to through their formal representation of a stakeholder group?
But then you should be excluding all NOMCOM members, even the voting ones, if you don't think that's appropriate.
Oh, that would make too many people happy.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. I mean, it wasn't the idea that we wanted to, you know, ban something or prohibit something. We just wanted to channel it and control it so it was manageable and had some reasonable expectations for consistency. So, you know, I think we're just inserting three words, voting council members. I think we're certainly weren't anticipating this level of complexity.
Right. I think that's right, James. So I'm trying to figure out where we are on this. It sounds like, I mean, how strong of an issue is this for you, Alan and Avery?
Well, since you asked, my view is that it shouldn't be in this recommendation at all. It should be in an OSC council, whatever. But since having said that and since I'm not going to make an issue of it and such, I couldn't care less. But it's not the right place for it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, okay, but let's assume...
And I'm not going to push it either. I think it's adding a little bit of insult to injury that's already there, and I don't think we should be doing that, but I'm not going to make a big fuss of it. If the person or the one of the people in that position want to raise it as a comment, they're welcome to.
Yeah, I that's the kind of the way I was leaning to. Let's keep it as it is. It's a little bit controversial, which may be good to stimulate comment on it, and we'll get to see how people outside this group feel or whether they feel it's an issue. Okay, let's jump on then to the next issue, which is an appeals mechanism, right? That was the whole subject. If the council votes against initiating a PDP, and Avery had raised the comment, Avery, why don't you talk about your comment?
Okay, yeah. I believe that any and all decisions made by any and all groups should be appealable. To say that the council is supreme and if it decides not to do a PDP, that's the end of it, go away, don't bother us, I think is as wrong as could be and as big an error as we can make in this document. But that's based on a general belief that all things are appealable. Okay, maybe Supreme Court at the end of the day is not appealable, but I wouldn't even go that far. So, obviously, therefore, if I'm told, sorry, you can't appeal this, and I was an active member of an advisory council, I mean, I would take it to the press, I would take it to the board, I would create a big issue about it, because that would be the only path for redress. And I don't think that the council necessarily wants to invite that. So I think that there has to be a mechanism. I think that a mechanism that requires a consultation with the AC who made the suggestion and some way of, and I know this is a stretch for the GNSO Council to actually sit down and negotiate with another group, but I think that has to be included. It's not possible that the council says no and that be the end of the story. Thanks.
Well, so the mechanism you're describing, Avery, is really outside of the council, right? Which is so. The board could always, as you kind of said in the middle of what you were saying, you said that the you could always go to the board, and the board could kind of force that upon the council. I think that still exists. I think what the recommendation was that there was no additional formal appeals mechanism that we recommended above and beyond what you could otherwise already do. But what you're saying is that maybe the other thing you might add is some sort of, I won't call it mediation, but some sort of sit-down between the AC and council leadership or council to see if there's any middle ground or see if there's any way to get that done?
A subcommittee even. I mean, basically a group composed of representatives of the two to see if something, and then an option for the council to reconsider and re-vote on, you know, like any time you have something that goes on in committee and you have two different committees that make different decisions or different recommendations on the same thing, they get together, they discuss it, and then if it still fails, well, then fine, it still failed. But the notion of an insular council that, you know, takes in requests and disposes of those requests without any appeals mechanism is just doesn't pass the giggle test.
Okay, James?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. James speaking. So, I have a couple just thoughts or concerns on this as it's written, and then have his comments. One would be, why are we essentially, is this a privilege that is extended exclusively to an advisory committee, or can this also be raised by some of the component stakeholder groups within the GNSO if they felt like, you know, if the PVP originated there and wasn't adopted by council? The other one is, you know, I'm concerned that when we start talking about a formalizing appeals mechanisms, that we start to go down the path that we were on with the, you know, some of the discussions with the AGRT, in that, you know, now we have to determine who has standing and who doesn't, whether there's a time limitation, so we don't want folks going back, you know, X number of years and resurrecting issues that didn't pass from previous sessions, and certainly want to make sure that there's a consolidated appeals process so that there's not multiple pending appeals. And it starts to go down a road that I think it's in the interest of fairness that we essentially shut everything down. So I think that, you know, perhaps what I'm hearing, what I'm understanding from Avery is that there were recommendation for an informal process, and we left it at that in the language here, and left it to the council and the various SOs and ACs to come up with what that might look like. I think that might be more appropriate coming out of this group than to actually design an appeals mechanism. Thanks.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, are we talking about this just in regard to approving the PDP, or could, for instance, a work group that comes out with a PDP report that council decides not to approve have the same sort of process? Because it's not only the approval process where something comes into council and council has to make a decision. It's not only the initiation process, rather.
Right, and actually, Alan, I was going to raise that after you said it. I mean, why just at this stage, if you have an appeals mechanism, why not, you know, failing to raise an issue, is, you know, that's a vote, or approving the charter, or here, initiating the PDP, or approving the results of a PDP. I'm not sure, and what the discussions were the last, you know, when we discussed this the first time, and going back to some notes, it was the group felt that there were already mechanisms in place at this stage that they could go to the board and they can get the board to try to take it up as an important issue to, you know, force it upon the GNSO. But having anything more formal just seemed like it wasn't, it didn't really make sense at the time.
The reality is a board is not going to overrule council. I can't imagine the scenario where, you know, the board may say council think about it again, but that's about as far as it's ever going to get.
Right, and the reality is, though, and you can't have an appeals mechanism either that forces the GNSO Council to initiate a PDP. So, I mean, that's the other thing of an appeal. I guess what Aubrey's talking about, though, is more, you know, to just have, sorry, I'm going to say have a sit-down again, is to just force people to just kind of talk about it and see if there's any way to resolve it. You know, I think we kind of did, well, I won't bring up a recent situation, but, you know, I think it's been tried, and I think if people think it's important enough, they could certainly convince council members to kind of reassess the situation. That's what happened with, you know, the JAS charter, you know, that it was voted, it was going to, I think it was voted down, and then it was either voted down or it was known that it was going to be voted down, and the council basically decided, let's try to form a committee to see if we can resolve it. You know, it didn't work out in that situation, but, you know, I think if the council thinks it's important enough, I think they will sit down with the people that are requesting. I don't think things are just forgotten. But, Alan and then Aubrey?
Yeah, if that's what we want to happen, then I think we need to put words into that extent. If you look at the tone in council right now, where there are at least a number of people who are saying we must follow the words of the law, and if we don't put something in it to that effect, then you will see comments in council, and strong ones, I believe, that say, sorry, we already voted on it. We are not required or perhaps not allowed to vote a second time on the same issue, and it's dead. Go away. So if we believe there needs to be some ability to reconsider and revote under some circumstances with some process, we need to say it. Thank you.
Okay, let me go back to Aubrey.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into talking about the jazz flashpoint, but I do want to point out that committee was pretty much purely a GNSO, you know, proponents and opponents within the GNSO to try and work out their differences. The GNSO Council has made a decision which is contrary to your recommendation, so let's sit down and see if we can't hammer out in a committee an amicable compromise. Even at the moment within the jazz example, that's not an ongoing activity. There might have been a mail exchange between the chair of one group and the chair of another group, and both of them look like they're standing fairly firm. There is not a group of members of each that have been told, okay, we obviously have a difference of opinion between the SO and the AC here. Let's sit down and see if we can't resolve it. And so, yeah, I think I agree with Alan that, you know, we basically need some answer, replace basically words that say to the effect of, you know, there is no formal appeals mechanism to say that should the GNSO decide against starting the PDP, you know, a committee will be established or should be established to leave open the possibility that there may be an occasion where it's not appropriate, but should be established between the AC and the SO to discuss resolution of the difference in perspective or something like that, as opposed to just saying, no appeal, go away. Thanks.
How do the others on the call feel about that, James, Paul? You know, Alex agrees with that. So the last way. Oh, Paul. Okay.
Hey, Jeff. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just going to ask Aubrey what you just said. Could you jot that down and either put it in the chat or have Marika put it
up? Sure. I'll give it a try. By the way, I can hardly hear you. You're really hard to hear, Paul.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a combination of being sick and on a headset. I rarely
oh,
use.
Oh, sorry.
I was just going to ask, can you please write it down? I mean, what I heard you say sounded okay to me, but it would just be helpful to see it in writing.
Okay, so while Aubrey's typing, and just to kind of recap, Aubrey was just saying it's at this stage for the initiation of the PDP. Aubrey, I'm assuming it's not at any other stage, like, you know, voting on whether to raise an issue or voting to approve a charter or any other votes. It's really just at this stage?
Yeah, basically. Someone who had standing to ask for bylaws-based standing, to ask for an issues report at the time that the PDP is voted on, is the issue that I'm talking about. Now, as I said in other places, I believe that the charter and the vote for the PDP should be together, but if they're not together, no. I'm not suggesting that it also happen at the time of the charter, though, of course, that's where we are in the jazz flash. But that's beside the point.
Okay. So while Aubrey's typing, James?
Yeah, sorry. I did step away briefly, so I may have missed something very critical. But if we're going to go down this path where we start prescribing that there is a formal or informal appeals mechanism, I think that we need to also establish some sort of a threshold. For example, with the independent review panel, the threshold is that the person raising the appeal has to demonstrate that the deciding body, I guess in this case the GNSO Council, either had material omissions on the information that they considered when making their decision, or that they didn't follow their own processes. I think that would possibly limit the idea that appeals are happening just because, you know, I think this issue is important, but I couldn't get enough people around me to agree that it was important, so now I want to raise it again. And I think that we need to possibly define what constitutes an appealable decision, not just where in the process it happens or who can raise it, but also, you know, on what grounds. Thanks.
Okay, so the who can raise it is what Aubrey had said, is anyone that has standing in the bylaws, meaning certainly an advisory committee, if they ask for an issues report, got the issues report, and then the council considered it and rejected it. An advisory committee like the ALAC or the GAC or the...
Are you saying any of those has standing, or only the one that actually made the request?
I would think it would be the one that made the request.
Okay. Yeah, I was too.
Then we don't need to say who has a more general saying. The objection, the appeal can only come from the body that requested the issues report.
Yeah. Now the question though is, what if it's just so it's a lower threshold? So okay. We have this in advisory committee request and issues report. Now we have, if it's within the GNSO, it's a lower threshold to raise an issue or to get an issues report than it is to get a PDP initiated. So are we also saying that anyone who wanted the issues report on the council, even if it didn't get voted on for a PDP, they can then go through this process, or are we just limiting it to the advisory committees?
No. There's nothing in our document which says the process within the GNSO for raising an issue. All that takes is one counselor to make a motion.
Right, but there's a threshold to approve it.
Yes, but the requester is once it's approved the GNSO. There's nothing in our in what we've described so far which describes the process within the GNSO prior to the GNSO voting on it.
Well, you could.
So I don't think we want to get into that right now.
Well, I mean, in theory, you could say, and I'm not recommending this, you could say that it had to be someone who voted in favor of raising the issue. But I understand what you're saying. On the other, you know, so the first question is this appeal limited to just an advisory committee, or is it just anyone on council that's just not happy?
But then you're raising the issue of, can any councilor object to any vote that they're not happy with the outcome of?
And exactly.
We don't want to go there.
Right. So I agree with that. So it sounds like just an advisory committee is what we're saying.
Or presumably the board should choose to.
Sure. Well, the board...
No, hold it. The board, on the board, the GNSO does not vote to approve, to initiate a PDP. They are required to.
No.
So it's only the advisory committee.
Report.
Pardon me?
Aren't they just required to do the issues report? They're not required to do the PDP. Let me go back.
I don't think so. I think they're required to do the PDP.
I believe Alan's correct.
Okay.
I'm not sure our rules cover that, but I think that is indeed what it says.
Not that it's ever happened.
It's never happened, though.
No, and I think there would be a lot of pushback if the board were to try to force a PDP on the council that it didn't want.
The board has done that several times. They just haven't called them PDPs. They have forced council to do things which resulted in policy. It's happened several times. STI is one of them.
Absolutely. And, in fact, you'll find in the last one the board had asked in their resolution the council to do something on competition, trust,
yep.
or whatever they called it. And if you listen to the last council meeting, well, Alan, you were on it.
Yeah, no, I understand.
The council pushed back for the first time, rightfully so. But, okay, so we have a couple people in the queue. We have, and I did not see who was first. Marika always appears first because she's, so I'll give her the benefit of the doubt.
Marika deserves to be first, always.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Marika. Just to comment on the discussion that you just had on whether it should apply to the council as well or only to the advisory committee or you know, whoever is requesting. I think, you know, as my understanding is, part of the reasoning for this recommendation would be that, you know, an advisory committee wouldn't be party to the discussion or maybe party through a liaison. But if there's no liaison, it might not be party to the discussion. Well, in the case of a council member, the council member is part of the discussion, so he or she could ask directly, you know, why are you feeling this way or why are you not voting in favor of it? So it seems less likely that such a mechanism would be necessary for council members as such, but it might be more appropriate for advisory committees or anyone else who has standing, as they are not directly party to discussions that the council is having.
Good catch.
Yeah, I think that does make sense, although, let's see. Let's read, and James, you may have a comment on this too, but let's read the language that Avery has put. He just sent it. So it says, the council shall initiate the PDP.
No, that was just me quoting from the bylaws. It's two before.
Ah, sorry. It says, the
and
PDP
maybe
work
I read
team
it
recommends
I read
on those occasions that the GNSO council rejects the initiation of a PDP, it should form a committee with the AC requesting the issues report to attempt to find a solution that is amenable to both the GNSO and the AC. Following such a discussion, the GNSO Council should vote again on initiating the PDP. James, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, this I feel should be a symmetrical process. So, for example, what if an issues report is passed? Can an AC, excuse me, an AC and SO appeal that and ask that it be stopped? And we're assuming that we're talking about a PDP that didn't, you know, make the threshold. But what if one did and someone was on the other side of voting against it? Look, I'm just pointing out that this seems like a great idea, and I was, pretty involved with some of the fact-finding that we did in the AGRT, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, that's a model you need to follow or anything like that. I'm just pointing out that there's this is a really complex issue once we scratch beneath the surface, and I think we need to be very careful here about how prescriptive we want to be. Thanks.
Okay, so is there anything you want to, I mean, would you modify the words a little bit, or you just don't think we need it?
I would, excuse me, I'm having a throat issue here. I would think that we would want to keep the language as minimal and as informal as possible, because once we start going down this road, I'm afraid that there's no bottom to this rabbit tunnel. It just keeps going.
I find describing it as a rabbit tunnel to be totally dismissive.
I want to respond to that. I'm describing it that because the issue is very large and very complex. Maybe an iceberg is a better description, that we only look at what's on the surface, but there's a lot more residing under the waterline.
Well, true, and one could do that with any issue, but you're right.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I guess I don't agree with James on this. If you start looking at the concept of appeals and saying where may we have one and where may someone want to appeal because they believe they have cause and they feel justice has not been done, it is the rabbit hole or the iceberg we're talking about. But this was being raised in one very specific situation of a issues report requested by an AC, which the council has voted down. And I don't think that one is nearly as complex. And, yes, if we start to generalize it and it becomes exceedingly complex, and it's certainly not something that we want to look at. The issue that Avery raised originally, I believe, is not nearly that as prone to be to complexity. I think it's relatively simple.
Okay, let me go to James.
Okay, just real quickly, if we can explicitly confine it to the context or the scenario that Avery described, then I have fewer concerns. Okay. That we're not trying to create a generic all-purpose appeals process. I would, however, would want to see some language that establishes why a council would need to revisit an issue that it has already considered and voted down. For example, had new information come to light that was left out of the issues report? Was there a change in the environment or the industry that needed to be considered that wasn't considered at the time, or did council not follow its own procedures? I think, you know, we have to say why we feel the council was in error in rejecting the issues report, and it can't just be because it didn't pass.
Okay. Oh, actually, that's a good segue into James. Why don't you take the language that Avery has? Why don't you revise it to include what you think would be the criteria, and then we could discuss it kind of on the group. I would also put in a time frame as well. You know, I think that was another issue that came up as far as how long after the decision should we have this, should form this committee, or should the request to form this committee come in? So, James, do you want to take that to something you'd feel comfortable with?
Yeah, I'll take a swing at that, and I'll send some language around to the list. It's probably just putting two or three qualifying adjectives into the language that Avery already has provided for us. So I don't think it will be much.
Okay. Can you also put in a time frame too? Just kind of just recommend a time frame, and then we can all throw that around?
Yep. I've got that. Thanks.
All right. Avery.
Yeah. I think putting in the time frame is a great idea, and to say they have to do it within 15, 21 days is easy. I think to try and generalize the criteria for which they consider it beyond the fact that the AC making the request had its request denied is going to open up that can of worms that you don't want to open, because you know, it's just how can we foresee all the possible issues? And if you do put a laundry list of issues, I can guarantee you that I can come up with wording that will, for any issue, that matches one of those issues. So I think it's a complexifying task. I know you've already decided on it and agreed to do it, so I wish you luck. But it does complexify it, other than to say, listen, two fundamental bodies who have bylaws standing to participate in the creation of PDPs are in disagreement. They've never spoken on the issue. There's nothing in the bylaws in the process that says they got to sit together and work this out. So here's basically a point where they sit together. Now, if what comes out of the committee is a recommendation that there be no change, but that the discussion has been logged, the council members have read it, it's all et cetera, and they vote against it again. And then at least there's been a process that's been properly followed, and there has been contributing conversation. But to say that committee must find a, you know, matter of fact that will cause the appeal to be, you know, and then we'll end up in Virginia where even innocence, well, that wasn't on the list of things that you could appeal for. So I just think that that makes it far more complex, but thanks.
All right, well, why don't we just have, I kind of want to jump on to the next subject. Why don't we just have James drop the language, and then we'll comment on that. Sorry, you probably hear my kids in the background. Let's see. Let's talk about the next question is the thresholds, and then we'll kind of end it here. It says, should the approved voting thresholds apply to the entire GNSO council or just members present, as is the current practice? And then Av had made a comment, isn't this the reason for making a rule to use percentage of the entire council? And Alan says, question is still applicable, but it must be rephrased or just members voting. Alan, is your comment really because I think now most, in fact, all items for PDPs are subject to absentee voting as well?
Yeah, but absentee voting doesn't mean everyone. At council, someone – first let me ask a question. How is council decided to treat abstentions? Do they count as negative votes, or they are they're out of the total?
Looking to Margie, I should know this, but it hasn't in a couple votes I've been on since I joined the council, it has not. We haven't had any abstentions. So, actually, I think I'm the only.
There was a substantive discussion a while ago. I just don't remember how it was resolved, if it was resolved.
I believe they count as they are not votes in favor.
Okay.
And they are counted.
Yeah, they're counted as being present, right?
Okay. The problem is if you're present, you cannot be excluded from the count. If you're an absentee vote, you cannot vote. You know, if everyone is present at council, you will have 21 votes, yes, no, or abstention. If some people are missing, you may not have 21 total votes, or 20, sorry.
Right, but it's still percentage, right? So if one person doesn't vote of the registries, let's say, you'll still have 66.67% of the registries that voted in favor.
Well, but that's why I said it depends on whether we question this or not. If it's percentage of the people eligible to vote, then someone not voting essentially is a vote against.
Margie, do you have a comment on this?
Yeah, it's Margie. Unfortunately, it's really complicated, and I don't know the answer, but I know that Glenn does, so we can get that information for you for the next call, if that'll be helpful.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
I don't think it's a big issue, but if the question was relevant before, it may still be relevant now, even though we have
This is Glenn. Jeff?
Yes, please.
The abstentions are counted as votes against. So, I mean, if there are three abstentions, they do count as votes against.
Okay. But how would you treat it if people simply didn't vote, if they were absentee voting and they didn't vote by the threshold time?
Well, then those are counted as votes that don't come in. So you've got, 13 non-contracted party house, and there are three people who did not vote and their votes did not come in, and the rest are either for or against or mixed, but those votes are lost. So
it would only take six votes in that case to be more than 50%.
Yeah.
So the question still stands.
Okay, well, let's take this, think about it for the next meeting. We have a call scheduled for Monday, same time, and why don't we continue on that, and then also let me know if you're going to have additional comments, but the goal is to get this report out as early in February as we can. Remember, when we get the report out, it's not saying that as much as we would like everyone to agree with every single recommendation, it's not saying you agree with everything, and in fact, if you want to file something that's kind of a minority, even in a draft report, you're certainly welcome to do that, assuming we get it by the timeline. Obviously, if you don't agree with it by the time we get to the final report, then you of course, can do a minority statement. Anyway, let us know, and we will talk to you in a couple days on Monday. Any last comments?
Bye.
Oh. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jeff. Stay warm.
Bye-bye.